Subject that I wanted to catch up on is that of the Sbarro bombing that took place a number of years ago in Israel. And Arnold Roth has agreed to join us on the line. He has spent the last number of years fighting for justice for his daughter who was murdered in that attack. Arnold, a very good morning. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us.
Good morning, Howard.
So if for anybody who doesn't know, some of our listeners might be acquainted with the horrific incident and some might not. So if you just want to give us a quick overview as to what happened.
In August 2001, the Sbarro Pizzeria in the center of Jerusalem was the target of a Hamas gang equipped with a bomb, a human bomb, a man carrying explosives and a guitar case on his back. The pizzeria was filled with children, which is why it was the target. And my daughter and her best friend, two girls of 15 and 16, were at the counter when the bomb walked in, having been brought there by a young woman of 21, and he exploded. There were many people killed, 15 immediately, a 16th, unbelievably, is still unconscious until today, and 130 injured.
What happened following that? Was this woman arrested?
Yes, quite shortly afterwards. She was handed over to the Israeli authorities by people in the Ramallah area. She was put on trial, and she was convicted. None of that was made known to us at the time. We only found out about it afterwards. And we learned that she had been sentenced to 16 terms of life imprisonment, which from our point of view seemed a just outcome. However, it didn't work that way.
That is where it should have all ended for you, but it didn't.
That's right. In 2011, the Israeli government entered into a transaction with Hamas, an extortionate transaction in which the life of Gilad Shalit, a man who had been a serviceman in the Israel Defense Forces and had been held hostage for 5 years, was exchanged for 1,027 terrorists, the majority of whom were actual murderers. And one of those was Ahlam Tamimi, the engineer of the Sbarro massacre. She walked free that day and has been free ever since in Jordan, which is where she came from, where she was born and educated, and where she lives now.
And she, of course, returns to Jordan. She returns to Jordan almost to become a celebrity in the area, doesn't she?
You're precisely right, except for the word almost. Oh. She's without a doubt a celebrity of the first order, a person who was given a TV program of her own, which she produced from Amman, the center of Jordan, which is an ally of many countries in the West, for 5 full years. Program which was transmitted all over Africa, all over Australia, all over the world in Arabic, and had only one real reason for existing, which was the transmission and encouragement of more acts of terrorism along the lines of the one that Ahlam Tamimi masterminded and that she calls her operation.
Feeling of rage, impotence, outrage on your side must be quite significant. I imagine that at times it's quite difficult to even identify where the anger rests, whether it's with the Israeli government for concluding this type of deal, whether it's with the Jordanians, whether it's with the international community who turns a blind eye, who has turned a blind eye on this. How do you even identify what it is that you're feeling and towards what? Maybe it's at God. I don't know. You know, it's got to be something that you live with on a constant basis.
So I appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about this for the next 2 weeks, 24 hours a day, but that just won't be enough time.
Yes, I guess
so. Let me just make some selected approaches at dealing with what is really an excellent question. No, I wouldn't call it rage, and it's certainly not impotence. And it's directed at certain parties, and I'll be quite concrete about this. Yes, the government of Israel made what my wife and I and many other people consider to be a catastrophic mistake in entering into a transaction in which so many people with blood on their hands were set free and set free to a certain knowable outcome. But in our case, the United States government became absolutely central to our thinking and to our planning because Malki had American citizenship. All of my children, in addition to their being Israelis, have American citizenship. I discovered that there was a law that had never been applied in the case of people being killed in this part of the world, in Israel, And the law said that if you were an American victim of an act of terrorism, it didn't matter where in the world it took place, the United States government had both, took upon itself both the right and the obligation to go after the terrorists. Having familiarized myself with how that worked, I took myself to Washington some weeks after the Shalit deal in October 2011 was completed, and made a presentation to high-level officials in the Department of Justice. The result was a commitment to go after her if they could, to prosecute her if they could, and don't wait for us to get back to you. We'll only be speaking to you when we've got it all together. I have to say that I walked out of those meetings, there were several of them in Washington, thinking that we were in for a hard few weeks. But it was more than 5 years before the Department of Justice called us and said, we'd like to meet you. They met with us and they said, 3 hours from now, we're unveiling the highest level criminal terrorism charges against the woman. And we're adding her to the FBI most wanted terrorists list. And we've asked the Jordanians, with whom we have a treaty for this purpose, to extradite her so that we can put her on trial in Washington. And that began a battle which continues and has taken some quite dramatic turns, but continues until today.
And what do you think the outcome, or I know it, obviously what you're hoping for the outcome, do you think it's realistic that she will be extradited and that she will face justice?
The answer to that question really comes down to how seriously we think public figures relate with conviction and with sincerity to statements like, we really believe in justice, we really want to get your child's murderer and the bomber and the architect of this massacre into our custody. And there are two views. One of them is that this is nonsense, and the other is that they're very serious. Now feelings have sort of swung like a pendulum between those two poles. I can tell you that on the whole, things are moving in the direction that we want them to. First of all, because there's a $5 million reward on her head.
That's helpful.
That sounds, well, it is helpful, except that she's never been in hiding for even a day. I can share with you photographs of the inside and the outside of her home because they're all out there on social media. But much more meaningful is that in the last several months, and even more meaningfully than that in the last several weeks, there have been some important developments. And I know that we don't have a lot of time, so the United States government legislated in Congress in December 2019 a law that gives the U.S. government the power of sanction over Jordan for this very purpose. And what we're doing now is as intelligently and non-rage-driven as possible, getting the United States to actually implement it. Now, that's not something that's very well known in South Africa or in Israel or even in the United States. Where it's very well known and a major issue is in Jordan. Jordanian media have gone into a pretty close facsimile of hysteria about the possibility that foreign aid to Jordan, Jordan is the third largest recipient of United States foreign aid in the world, may now be stopped, because that's what exactly what the law says. Of course, what the law says and what people do aren't always the same thing, but that's why we're campaigning. My wife and I haven't given up. We don't want to, we don't expect to see our daughter come back. Let me make that clear. And we don't want to see the murderer have some unfortunate accident or be shipped off by the government of Jordan to an island where she would be incommunicado. What we want is justice. We want to see her in a court, and we want to see the world face up to what terrorism really is. She's the embodiment of something so hideous, so almost beyond comprehension, that the fact that she's being swept under the carpet, and trust me, that she is, and her case is, and so are we, is really unbearable and dangerous for all of us.
I'm fascinated how, I mean, obviously this, that day changes your life forever. There's no way that any parent, I'm not sure how a parent gets through this. That's for another time. But when you see the incidents unfolding over the last week in the United States, where you see a man being killed because of race, and for absolutely no reason, because it's a murder. I believe it's murder. The unlawful, intentional killing of another human being. I believe it is murderous. But when you see this type of situation happening, and then you see the reaction to it, I would imagine that this must cause a tremendous reaction in you, because to some extent you're dealing with this, your loss, completely alone. I mean, not completely alone, because obviously you've got a support system and there are many people that are helping you along the way. But on the other hand, you don't see this type of reaction, but you also can identify with the murder of somebody based on race, which is in fact why your daughter was murdered, because she was Jewish. So this must be a strange phenomenon for you. I'm interested in your thoughts.
Well, it's a painful phenomenon. It doesn't play out quite the way you've described it, but you're pretty close. You're right, first of all, in saying that Malki and everybody else in the Sabara pizzeria, that they were murdered because they were Jewish, not because of occupied territories, and not because of the Fatah argument or the Hamas argument. And I know that from the murderer. That's what she says. She says this is a religious conflict, and that's why we needed to do what we did, and that's why we'll do it again. But the we live in a world of slogans and knee-jerk philosophical responses to things. People who say that Black Lives Matter don't seem to realize that they're also saying that Pink Lives or Green Lives don't matter. People who say never again don't seem to realize that never actually lasts beyond tonight's news. And people who invoke justice, and this is the part that really is the highest level of motivation for us, people who invoke justice don't seem to realize that justice applies whether you're on the side of the victim or on the side of the perpetrator, or if you don't have a viewpoint. Justice, without it, we're doomed to live awful lives. We can't have civilized society. So justice, for all of the pronouncements of the many politicians that, lo aleno, it's been my fate to have to deal with, justice doesn't always mean what it means in the dictionary or in polite discourse among people, or when it comes out of the mouths of some of these public figures. Justice really means something, and we're engaged in trying to see it happen.
And unfortunately, that is where we do have to leave it. Arnold Roth, thank you for taking the time to speak to us, and thank you for speaking to us in such an open
way. Thank you, Arnold.